We'll have to ask Steve Phillips what his policy was, like leaking info if I catch you, this, that. I bet you he just said, don't be stupid about it. I don't care about a few leaks here and there, but don't be stupid.
Yeah, that's the way I think it used to be. Now it's cone of silence across the board. So Hackstall will join us, though. He's leaving the Leafs bench, and he's off to Seattle. He'll join us at 6. Here is our TSN MLB analyst and Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, we've been talking about the sports world a lot, and how these front offices now, and it's not exclusive to one sport. I think it's across the board. It's like a cone of silence. Like, you can't get any information out of anybody. And it feels like it's more of a modern rule that applies to almost every team in every sport. Do you sense that? And what was your policy back when you were running shops in the 90s?
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting. I think it is more restrictive, and I think HIPAA regulations have become more aware. There's more awareness around the HIPAA regulations with regard to injuries, for sure. Although, you know, when the players sign their contract, they do sign away their right when it comes to a baseball-related injury to have that restricted. But anything else, they still have their rights in place. But I got to tell you, as a general manager, leaks drove me crazy. Because I believed that knowledge was power, and I didn't want anybody to know what I was thinking. I didn't want other teams to know. Now, the media, like, I would meet the media every day as the Mets general manager, and there's a talent to be able to answer questions and not say anything. And I that was what I did. I talked to them. I was always available. Nobody could ever complain. I always gave the exact same answer to everybody. So I do the scrum, and if somebody showed up late and they asked me a question, I'd say, well, this is what I told everybody else, and I'd say the same thing. I didn't go off the record. I didn't leak stories, and it drove me crazy when there were leaks out there, to the point that I said, give me the phone bills. I want to see who's chirping. I want to see who's leaking stories. And Bobby Valentine was, you know, famously a leaker. He would tell people stuff, and so I ended up banning him from going to the winter meetings, because we'd have a meeting, he'd go to the lobby and tell the writers everything we talked about in the meeting. And in the meantime, you know, I'm competing for a player in free agency with another team, and they're reading in the New York newspapers everything that I'm thinking. And so I will tell you that I was always available, I always answered questions, and I would never tip my hand, because I was competing. It's my arena. I don't get to hit or throw or catch, but it's my chance to make a deal. And if I think the best thing for the organization is that other teams, our competition, doesn't know what I'm doing, then I don't want anybody talking about it.
Steve, what the hell do we have on our hands here with the pitchers getting tested for sticky stuff, walking off the mound all geared down? Like, it's just Bobby Manns is in the spotlight again for seemingly the wrong reasons. I mean, how could this have been handled? I think we talked about it on this show, possibly circle back on it at the end of the year and then have an approach. It just seems like a sideshow right now.
So, raising kids, or if you're a teacher and somebody's cheating on a test, do you say to them, you know what, go ahead and finish cheating on this test, but on the next one, don't? And really, that's what the players want. The players aren't surprised by what happened. They knew this was an issue, that there was going to be some end to it when Major League Baseball was investigating and collecting baseballs and trying to gather information. I honestly don't think that there's the problem's the players. I really do believe it. They cheated. They were given an inch. They took a mile. And then everybody gets mad at Rob Manfred. What I don't understand is where is the, like, so the commissioner's job is, you know, to look after the best interest of baseball. Why is that not the Players Association job too? That, like, the idea that everybody's mad at the guy holding the cheaters accountable instead of being mad at the cheaters, like, we're missing the point. So Max Scherzer. So Matt Scherzer, you know, acted like a little kid, assuming the position with his arms outstretched, and then he got worked up about this.
I would have too, Steve. I would have too if that happened to me. Three times I would have been like, this is a joke.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He's on the executive council of the Players Association. The players cheating is they're cheating against each other. It's player-on-player crime, right? So pitchers are dominating hitters, and they're taking money out of the pocket of the hitters and putting it in their own pocket. Their colleagues within their players' association, they're taking advantage of them. Rob Manfred doesn't talk to many players. He talks to the crusty owners. Tony Clark, the president of the Player Association, he talks to players. If anybody knows about the cheating in the game or steroids in the game or anything else, if it, the guy's got the best chance of knowing is the guy who runs the Players Association. How do they not ever have an opinion about players cheating when they're cheating each other? There's no accountability, no accepting responsibility, and everybody wants to get mad at Rob Manfred for holding players accountable because they're cheating in a way to gain dominance over others. It's like the steroid era. People want to blame Bud Selig. Bud Selig would have had drug testing in baseball in 1994 before Sosa and McGuire and that whole thing, but the union rejected it. And so the first time he was able to get it instituted after Sosa and McGuire, he got it put in. The whole idea of the Astros, the people say players get mad at Rob Manfred because he let the Astros players get off the hook without punishing them. You know why he did? Because the union said he couldn't punish them. They would not give him access to the players if he was going to punish them. That if he wanted to talk to them, they needed immunity. And you know what he did? He thought, for me to get the story, I need to talk to the players to figure out what went on. If nobody talks to me, I won't be able to resolve this. I need to know. And players get mad at him. How about 29 other teams worth of players? Why don't you get mad at your union leadership who actually said, no, you can't punish the Astros? Like, I don't get it. They get mad at Rob Manfred for it. Your union negotiated that position, and Rob Manfred didn't have a choice yet. You get mad at Manfred. It's crazy.
Well, and this isn't going to slow down. I mean, now it's a rule. You know, you can be checked, and you can be checked multiple times, and the opposing manager can call for it, and it's just going to keep happening. And these players, I find it incredibly immature. I mean, we said it yesterday. That Sergio Romo stunt was a joke.
Here's the thing.
Acting like a 2-year-old.
We think that it's, you know, baseball is grown men playing a kid's game. The reality is it's a kid's game played by grown men who act like kids. That's what it is. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, here's the thing. Accept it. You put yourself in this position. How about this? Over 70% of pitchers this week have had a decline in their spin rates on their four-seam fastballs. This was pervasive. It went from guys getting a grip on the ball to where they understood spin rate, guys using it for spin rate. And so they're getting mad that they're going to be held accountable. And Clayton Kershaw saying, oh, if a manager challenges us, then you know, there should be a punishment for the manager if he's wrong. So that's like telling your kid, here's your curfew. And then 20 minutes before his curfew, calling him and saying, hey, are you on your way home? And he's like, what are you calling me for? You gave me a curfew. I'll be home for my curfew. And then if he shows up on time, then you should be punished for actually asking him if he was going to be home on time. This is absurd. I mean, the players put themselves in this position. They cheated. And now they're getting mad that they're being held accountable, and they want to control the accountability. It's like, you know, if you don't want to be treated like a kid, don't act like one. And so the parenting that's being handed down, Rob Manfred can't control players' behavior. The players control their behavior. What Rob Manfred can do is he can hold them accountable for their behavior within the rules, and it has to be negotiated with the union. And so the idea that Rob Manfred's the guy who's at fault, nobody ever points out the union's role in this. Why is it okay to them to let the players cheat? Like, I don't get it.
Well, we'll find out, because, again, it's not going to stop anytime soon. We're chatting with Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. So the Jays take two wins out of Miami, and it's not like the Marlins are much of a team, but I think what stood out was it looked like a conventional starter does his job into the bullpen does his job. Chatwood, Mesa, Romano, It's not exactly lighter into Ward into Hanke, but it worked for back-to-back games. And Stripling was really quality a couple of nights ago. Robbie Ray does it again tonight. His strikeout-to-walk rate is off the charts. He's just not wild anymore, Steve. Like, I don't know what he's done here, but he's not wild anymore. And, I mean, they did what they were supposed to through two games. And most importantly, they did not give up leads, and their bullpen held together. And now they got Baltimore for four starting tonight. You're back to two games above 500. If you can take three out of four, maybe even a sweep, which should be reasonable, you're probably back in the race come Monday morning.
Yeah, they could absolutely be back in the race. That's what they have to do between now and the All-Star break, is get back into the race. And you're right. The last four games, you know, they've come up with a rhythm to the way that they play. You know, good teams have a rhythm. You know, we get good starting pitching. We score early. We beat up on the middle relievers. The bullpen comes in. We win the game. We shake hands at the end of the game. The next time out, we get a quality start. You know, when you get that rhythm going, that's where they are right now. And I got to tell you, Robbie Ray looks like a legitimate number two starter. I talked to an American League scout, and he said, like, the Jays deserve a ton of credit because they've done what everybody hoped could be done with Robbie Ray, but nobody could do it, to get him to refine his delivery and his thinking, get him to throw strikes. His walks per nine innings on average is 4.11. Now, last year it was over seven walks per nine innings. This year he's 2.23 walks per nine. He's been excellent and even better of late. And Stripling's been pretty good too. And I still look at, you know, Robbie Ray's pitching like a solid number two. Here's the thing that really is tough to swallow is, and I'm writing about this in my column for tomorrow, but the Jays are going to need a guy like Taijuan Walker, like they got last year at the deadline. They're going to need a guy like that again, who's predictable when you give him the ball. Taijuan Walker acknowledged this week that the only offer he got from any team was from the Mets.
He sat around forever.
That's the only offer he got. And he got a two-year deal at $17 million with an option year for $6 million with a $3 million buyout. So if it's a two-year deal, it's 2 times 10. If it's a three-year deal, it's 3 times 7.66. And the biggest concern the Jays had was his performance against left-handed hitters. And it wasn't great, but he is so much better this year. He's using his two-seam fastball. He's dominating left-handers this year. He's been great for the Mets. And, man, he could have really helped that rotation at a very reasonable price.
Well, he's not available anymore for the Jays, so obviously we'll have to see what they do between now and the end of next month. But what have you seen out of Springer through the first two outings? He still doesn't, you know, have a hit, but he looks healthy. I mean, that's, I guess, what I've been waiting for, is to hear about some sort of setback or some sort of an issue. To me, it looks like he's rehabbed appropriately. He won't stay in the five hole for long. You know, maybe by the end of the weekend he's moving up, but health, I think, was the priority, especially with two wins against a team like Miami. What do you make of Springer through two games?
Yeah, completely agree. He hit the ground ball that Jesus Aguilar, the first baseman, dove for, and they got him out at first, but he had to leg it out. He was racing the pitcher to the base, and that, to me, was the most telling play, because about 10 days earlier, I saw a video of him running in the outfield, and I thought, man, he's short striding. He's protecting his quad. He doesn't look like, they kept talking about he's close. I'm thinking, he's not close. But he looked like he ran at full stride, without hesitation, without holding up, finished. And, you know, a lot of times deceleration can be a problem when you've had a leg injury. And that wasn't an issue for him at all either. And he went into the dugout smiling. And I agree. I think that you know, knock on wood, keep their fingers crossed. They probably got this leg thing behind them for the year. Because, you know, I was concerned they were going to rush him, but this time they took their time. They did the right thing. Yeah, okay, so he missed 70 games. I mean, you know, if they had been more conservative early, he might have missed 40 games, you know, and so it cost him a bit, but he does look ready to go right now, and that's just another guy. Boy, their lineup, and I'm right about that too. Their approach at the plate, their ability to hit the ball from line to line. You know, in the game yesterday, I think it was Teoscar Hernandez and Bichette both hit liners down the right field line into the corner. And just, you know, quality approaches at the plate. Really, really good job. And you know, their hitting coach deserves a ton of credit.
Great stuff, buddy. As always, we look forward to the article up on TSN.ca, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay, you bet. Thanks, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Writing columns,
doing
hits. Got everything on the go, man.
He makes a great point about, you know, you want to do these things, and then all of a sudden the Players Association steps in. You know, it's always been it's a fine line, right? You want to implement rules. You want to, you know, even in hockey, a guy gets a suspension. Well, the PA's involved. Well, they're protecting both players, the guy
exactly.
who did it and the guy who got hurt, like, you know, or the guy who is the victim of it. Like, it's there's so many rules. Maybe Manfred does want to do a bunch of things, but he can't because his hands are tied.
It's got to be collectively bargained, right? And the union's never going to give that up. Ever? Why would they? Why would you allow the other side to have any power? Like, these two sides, they work together. There's cohesion. They should have the same end goal. Like, let's make the most money as possible, and let's make sure everything works well, and the growing of the game, and the brand, and the integrity, and the protection. But you give an inch, they might try to run a mile, and neither side ever wants to do that. But there could be some reckoning, you know, upon us here, where the CBA in baseball is going to expire at the end of this year. So it is going to be a dicey winter. It could be dicey. I hope they don't lead to a work stoppage, but it wouldn't be shocking. It does feel like there's a lot of animosity between both sides, and they got to iron a lot of stuff out, for sure.